4. Harlot woke up a few hours later, with the other salvagers looking down at him anxiously. The voice was there as well, at the back of his mind, completing his sentences for him, but not always with the right words. He'd been a real shipbuilder once, back before a tight-ass supervisor and a few bad deals with spare parts saw him kicked out of the port cities. He knew the safety rules and the dangers of being around wind demons for too long with shoddy wards. Hell, he drilled the men out here on the same damn safety rules. It couldn't have messed up his head. He'd been smarter than that, always smarter. He'd been careful, had to be, given the crappy ships he worked on most days with tools the folks in the port cities would have thrown out as no longer useful. This had to be something else, something special. It could be his big chance, the voice whispered. Take down Locke, and the whole Republic would know Harlot was serious business. He'd get real clients, not smugglers with scrapyard parts and scrapyard money. Sir, one of the men said. We were worried. Still are, said another one. But how to get Locke? How to do it? How to find her and kill her for what she did?
It's fine, Harlot said.
It's not fine, a third man said. You've got the fog, Harlot. You need to see a healer. The reaction was like a kick in the gut.
It's fine, Harlot repeated. Not the damn fog.
If he dropped the wards on one of the airships, a wind demon would escape. No, no, that was a terrible idea. Damn, maybe he did have the fog. Unless the wind demon would definitely go after Locke. And it would. It would. It absolutely would. All Harlot had to do was drop the wards and rip open the canvas. That was all. The freight hauler, the demon was still summoned from when they'd flown it earlier today. It was perfect. That was the one to use.
Need to clear my head, Harlot said. You go over the old ferry again, see if there's anything to strip. Going to tune that freight hauler. Something off on the morning run.
The salvagers looked at him in silence. They'd never questioned him before. He'd taught them everything they knew. He opened his mouth to speak again, and that was when three strange people came out of the nearby woods and headed toward Harlot and his men. One of them was tall, too tall to be human, and when she pushed the hood of her fur-lined cloak back, the tusks gave her away as an ogre. The other woman was bony and barefoot and wore a peasant dress, but her smile was twitchy and the grass behind her looked muddy, like she was trailing dirt. The third was a dwarf in a cloak, and he, or she, or it, was the least strange of them.
"We seek a woman," said the bony woman, her voice flat. "Tall, or ajar. Her name is Locke. We want her."
They would take her, hurt her, kill her, and that was good, but bad, because it would be them doing it, and it needed to be a demon, needed to be her. Harlot looked at the ogre. She had a staff, but a staff wasn't a sword. She was the one to worry about, still, big as she was.
"Haven't seen her," Harlot said.
"Her aura was here," said the bony woman. "Lies," said the dwarf.
His voice was hollow, like it was being piped through a tube.
"Take them,"
Harlot snarled, and swung at the ogre with his wrench. His wrench sank into the ogre's chest, and for a moment Harlot felt the fierce joy of striking her down. And in the back of his mind, he wondered if maybe he did have the fog, because he'd never felt like that about hitting someone. And then the wrench passed out the other side of the ogre, and Harlot was stumbling through her, and it was like walking through a gust of rain during a storm. And then he was behind her, and the whole world was a little too sharp and bright and hurt his eyes. Two of his men were on the ground, coughing and clutching at their faces, and there was mustard yellow mist swirling around them and trailing out from the dwarf's hood. Another stumbled and twitched, something wrapped around him, and Harlot saw that it was the bony woman, only she wasn't bony anymore. She was coiled like a rope, and the man tangled up in her was glowing and shrinking somehow, bits of him going away. Harlot took all this in as the ogre turned to him. Her hand reached into his chest, and again, it felt like walking into a heavy rain.
"Do we need him?" the ogre asked.
and Hurlett looked down at the hand embedded to the wrist in his chest. And he held very still, even though some part of him thought that he should leap away, because it wasn't a very large part, and it wasn't sure, and all he could think was that yes, yes, they needed him, please, they needed him. The fog was lifting and everything was sharp, and the ogre's hand was a strange cold softness all through him.
No, said the bony woman.
And then, with an impossible, crushing pain, it wasn't. Sunrise Canyon was a great crimson ribbon that cut through the rolling hills of the countryside around it. The grass, a pale green that faded to gold in autumn, gave way sharply to the vivid red of stone walls, slick and shining as though carved by a master and not worn away over countless generations by the river that ran along the canyon floor. During the day, the canyon got enough direct sunlight for light foliage to grow near the river, and the bright canyon walls were like buildings that blocked the sun. At night, the trace crystals that gave the walls their color lit the entire canyon in red, giving more glow than starlight and less than the moon, casting strange shadows on either side. It was well after sunset as Desidora descended into the canyon, carried in the talons of a great snowy white eagle, whose wings were vast and silent and pink in the light of the walls. Desidora looked over and saw the mining facility as they passed by it, a great wooden dock attached to a well-braced archway in the wall. The dock and archway were the only black parts of the glowing wall, save for a narrow trail that led down the wall itself, switching back and forth several times before it finally reached the dock. It looked to Desidora like a giant mouth with its tongue sticking out. The mining facility was not their destination this night, however.
"Can you sense the fairy creature?" she asked, looking down at the sparkling river that snaked through the bushes and low trees below, and gripping Ulilenia's talons a bit more tightly. She did not hate heights, but a few months ago she had fallen to her death, priestesshood, and it had left her a little nervous.
"Not yet," Ulilenia said, and to Desidora her friend's mental voice sounded strained.
"The crystals in the canyon walls are the rushing waters that hide the wolf's quiet steps."
"And it is the wolf in this metaphor?"
Desidora asked, looking up to the underside of Ulilenia's wings. Near the leg on one wing was a patch of black, in a shape that looked almost like antlers. Ulilenia had been pure white once, but while Desidora had been falling to her death those few months ago, Ulilenia had been helping Locke win a gambling tournament. In the process, she'd fought another fairy creature, an experience that had marked her, literally, in this case.
"It is," Ulilenia sighed in Desidora's mind. "I hear your words, spoken and unspoken, and you need not fear. I am no danger to you or the others."
"Shall I just nod uncomfortably and let it be until something absolutely terrible happens and then get the full story?" Desidora asked. "Or could you save time and fill me in right now?"
Ululenia's wings flapped once, tightly, as they slid between the branches of the tallest trees in the canyon. A moment later, they were coming up on the ground. Ululenia flapped again, slowing their descent, and Desidora let go as Ululenia's talons loosened, landing in a crouch, with no more impact than if she'd jumped from a table. Ululenia herself landed in her natural form, a snowy white unicorn whose horn shone in all the colours of the rainbow. The black mark still rode her flank, a black mask from which rose a pair of antlers.
"My people are the leftover energy of the ancients' magic," she said to Desidora, as she looked around the little clearing where they had landed. "We are alive. We eat and we sleep, as other living creatures do."
The clearing was near the river, and Desidora could hear the gentle rush of the water not far away. The ground was bare, and the trees overhead stretched and spread in their fight for what little natural light the canyon offered.
"Yes," said Desidora, when it became clear that Ululenia needed prodding. "I remember the first time we met. We ate in that restaurant owned by Locke's old friend. You had catfish. I had expected a unicorn to avoid eating meat."
"The wolf and the jaguar are creatures of this world, as are men," Ululenia said, "and most eat meat, as is their nature. There is nothing strange in me doing the same."
She paused, then started forward, horn shining gently on a trail leading away from the river.
There is but one thing our kind cannot consume without changing who and what we are.
Each other, Tessadora guessed, following behind Ululenia.
We can grow stronger by taking in the power of another, as the creature I fought did, and as I did when I killed him. We are known as the Dark Fae.
Ululenia paused, and then added,
We do not mean it as a racial judgment.
Tessadora laughed, and Ululenia looked back over her shoulder.
I'm sorry, Tessadora said. But you're telling me that you've consumed the essence of another fairy creature, and that doing so has changed you, and your major concern is that I might think the name has troubling racial implications.
Ululenia's ears flicked back in annoyance.
I am not judging you being a death priestess again.
I will try to avoid judging you as well, Desidora said with a smile, and in a softer voice added,
And I am sorry. That must be very difficult.
Ululenia shook her mane.
It is not what I would have chosen.
I felt much the same when I was chosen as a death priestess, Desidora said, and remembered the tears, the prayers.
However it came to pass, you cannot be something you hate. You have learned to stop hating your power.
Desidora smiled at the unicorn before her.
It is a tool. I don't love it, but I can use it when I need it, then put it away when I don't.
She let it slide away from her completely, and for a moment in her thoughts she was a love priestess again, feeling the countless auras of people and things everywhere searching for companionship and acceptance.
I know who I am.
As do I. I will survive.
Ululenia looked ahead again, then wickered. Light played around her, and when it cleared she was a woman in a pale white gown, horns sparkling on her forehead.
We will need to move quietly.
Desidora followed behind her. They kept to the trail for a few minutes, and trail was a generous term for what was more likely just an animal track leading to the river, a patch of lighter pink in the faint red light of the walls, and then came out of the trees into a more open area.
I can feel it more clearly, Ululenia whispered, frowning. Oh dear.
Shire.
Desidora stretched out her own senses. The air went chilly around her, and the scrubby little bushes by her feet curled into twisted hedges bristling with thorns. As a love priestess, she'd been able to sense the auras of those around her, to guide lovers into happier relationships, and when she'd become a death priestess, that power had shifted to the more powerful, if less romantic, ability to sense and alter the auras of living creatures and most types of magic. Fairy creatures were immune to her powers, but she could still feel them if she concentrated, or at least the effects of their presence. What she felt now was muddled. There was death not far away, a great deal of old death.
Hunting ground, she asked, and then corrected herself.
No, a lair.
Is this one of your...
What are they? Dark Fae?
It sounds bad when you say it, Ululenia murmured, shaking her head.
And yes, after a fashion... What lies ahead is the result of the death of many fairy creatures.
What is it?
It is not an it.
Desidora rolled her eyes.
I apologize. He or she.
You do not understand.
Ululenia looked over. Her horn had gone dark, and her face, pink in the red light of the walls, looked worried.
When fairy creatures fight, and both are too badly injured, instead of one absorbing the essence of another, they merge. The result is called the chimera, and rather than it, you should think of them as they.
She reached out and took Desidora's hand, and then led her into the trees ahead. Both of them walked soundlessly, Ululenia from a perfect magical grace and tie to nature, and Desidora from years as a love priestess, helping people sneak into each other's rooms. The trees ahead seemed to be bleeding in the red light, and as they got closer, Desidora saw that it was sap. Bark had been slashed with great, jagged claws. She could sense the death around her now, without trying. Plants had been torn from the ground, shredded in fury. Wild game had been taken down, ripped apart while still alive. Men and women, too, miners and crystal technicians and hunters who travelled into the canyon for adventure. And somewhere amid all that death, there was the body of the former mine supervisor, never recovered from when he foolishly tried to bargain with the Chimera, with hopefully enough of his wrecked corpse intact to have some trace elements of his aura, along with the imprint of the aura-coded key upon it, still present.
"This is a terrible idea," Desidora said very quietly. "If we wish to save Derry..."
"I know." As they passed the bleeding trees, they came to a smaller clearing near the canyon wall. The ground was strewn with bones, lit bloody red this close to the wall, along with skin and clothes and fur and, above all that, pain. In the aura that permeated the clearing, Desidora felt not just the deaths but the rage that had caused them, the choking madness that blotted out everything except the need to kill. Most people would blanch at such a feeling, but most people were not death priestesses capable of wrenching the life from a living creature with a wave of their hands. Desidora had felt that power, had nearly lost herself to it before the others pulled her back from the brink of madness. Then she'd shut it away, trapping it where it could not help her even when she desperately needed it. Now she turned her aura inward, drawing the pain and death from around her until it covered her like a shroud. It did not leave her invisible, precisely, but instead left her ignorable to most creatures. Ululenia glanced over and nodded. Her hand slipped from Desidora's, and she closed her eyes. A moment later, her horn flickered and went dark. They crept into the clearing. Desidora swept the bones on the ground. Beneath the pain, there was a natural aura, the core of the being who had died. And above that, a tiny thin layer below the final immediate pain of death, would be the imprint of magic upon them. She could sense the miners almost easily, working all day amid the ambient magic of the crystals, their auras all but glowed to the naked eye, catching the angry red of the walls. It was powerful but raw, uncontrolled. She kept moving. Then the bones near the canyon wall stirred, and Desidora looked again at the carrion carnage, and saw the Chimera. It was death and pain and madness, tattered wings fused to skin split by spurs of bone. The pictures made the Chimera look like a lion with some extra head sewn on, but there was nothing neat or simple about this creature. There was wolf and eagle and jaguar, and no clean line between them. It shifted again, growling in its sleep, and little rainbow sparks spat from its joints. Desidora could almost feel sorry for it. She also pulled the shroud of ignorability around her, even tighter. Then, scanning the ground near the Chimera, Desidora saw the faint flicker of crystal magic, cleaner and simpler than that of the fairy creature. She squinted and saw crystals scattered by the wall, still shining faintly. She tapped Ululenia's arm and pointed, and Ululenia nodded ever so slightly. Desidora crept closer, looking hard at the floor for anything, anything at all, that might make a sound if she stepped on it, or even just near it. Even as her gaze kept trying to climb back to the Chimera, twitching as it, as they, slept. A few steps closer, and she could feel a corpse nearby, with an aura touched by magic, but differently from the miners. It was softer, less raw, and it was more complex as well, its aura echoing the patterns of attuned crystals, like the afterimages of a bonfire playing over and over again against closed eyelids. Complex crystal work, and spells, and... there. She pointed again. The movement made her gown, its pale green, now death priestess black from the effort of holding the shroud around her, rustle in the night. The Chimera went still. So did Desidora and Ululenia, but for Ululenia giving Desidora the angry mother of all accusing glares. Ahead, mostly wolf, except where part of its jaw slid uncomfortably into beak, lifted up, its eyes glowing with embers of rainbow light. Ululenia was very quickly a mouse on the ground by Desidora's foot. The wolf head rolled over. Something in the Chimera's body cracked like a popped knuckle as it did, and rainbow sparks hissed out. An eagle talon by the head twitched, and Desidora saw that the talon ended in a snake's head, the tongue flicking and testing the air, before it too seemed to relax. Desidora counted to 100, and then looked down at Ululenia. Then she pointed very slowly at the bones near the raw crystals. Ululenia, still a mouse, scuttled over toward where the chimera lay. Desidora held still. The mouse reached the bones, only a few feet from where the chimera slept. Ululenia sniffed them, then shifted into a squirrel. She gripped what had to have been a hand bone between her paws and scampered back to Desidora. Desidora took the bone. With a shroud around her and unnatural cold all through her own person, human remains gave her no discomfort. She held it close and felt the aura. A man, simple and small and greedy and vain, in love with his wife, and too tired after years of work to do enough to show it. No, useless. Above that, the pain, the hot flash of agony and slow, sickening realization that it was too much. It was not an injury to recover from, that parts of his body were over there now, and the only release would be when his heart stopped working, so that what was happening to him would just be happening to his body.